You're about to listen to the Complete Developer Podcast, the podcast by coders, for coders, about all aspects of life as a developer.
I'm Will, the curmudgeonly experienced developer.
And I'm Beej, the optimistic newbie developer. Welcome to another episode of Complete Developer Podcast. This week, we're finishing out the episode on starting a new job with the seven things not to do in your first week at a new development position. These relate back to last week's episode on seven things to do during your first week. But before we get started, Will, what have you been fighting this week?
I have been relearning WordPress a little bit. I am setting up a website for the book, you know, with all the lead pages and all that kind of, not really lead, actual lead pages, but it's the landing pages for it, you know, the basically all the marketing materials. And I'm using Thrive themes. And of course, I'm trying to get all that set up. So that's been the main thing I've been on, I guess. How about you?
Well, I had a great 4th of July visiting my nephew for his birthday. We played ball, walked in the park, made cookies. If you guys follow me on social media, you saw all the pictures. Yesterday, we had our second Code Newbie Nashville mixer. That was great. The turnout was amazing.
Yes, it was.
Like, I think we were expecting about 15, maybe 20 people to show up and ended up with a total of 28. We had so many people that we had to get an extra table. But I do have a major shout out to the staff at the pharmacy in East Nashville. They were great and worked with us as the group kept growing in number. They really kind of worked around their limitations and went out of their way to make it a great experience.
Yeah, it really went very well yesterday, better than we expected even.
And a little update on my dad. He is improving. He's in physical therapy now, moving around rather well. Brought my grandmother down from West Virginia when I came back from visiting my nephew. And then this past week, my sister came down from Cleveland to help out. She's a school teacher, and so she's got a few more weeks off for the summer. So she's helping take care of him since I started working. And speaking of working, I'm going to talk a little bit about my experience this first week before we get into the episode outline. But now it's time to roll that music. This week for IoTs, I have a pretty cool product I found, smart LED glasses. These are made by Kimion, which is a Korean company that produces these creative sunglasses that have LED strips in the front and a Bluetooth connection to your phone. Not only can you display messages with, you know, fun flashing GIFs and features like that, but you can also create your own via a downloaded app, and it's on iOS and Android. The glasses, honestly, they look kind of similar to those bulky sunglasses that I used to have when I was a kid to fit over your regular glasses.
Yeah.
The display is transparent, so you can still see while you're wearing them. I'm just waiting on this idea to get put onto the rear windows of vehicles. There's a few times that the horn just didn't cut it for what I wanted to convey to the other driver.
Alrighty.
Seriously, though, this is a great little IoT product, great for ball games, parties, or concerts. And for just about $70, it would make a fun gift. They're available on Amazon and really only require two AAA batteries. The hardware includes Bluetooth, an audio in and out, and like I said, the two batteries. The size is about 6.3 by 7.4 by 2.2 inches. And it uses Android KitKat 4.4 or iOS 7. And the Lightning Controls app. And I'll have a link to the website as well as the Amazon if you want to purchase it.
This week, we'd like to highlight a listener that has made several comments to us on Facebook based on posts and shares, but hasn't been mentioned in the show before. Thomas J. Tyler Phillips. His comments are specific to the posts and wouldn't make much sense reading on the air. However, we do want to recognize and thank you, Thomas, for being involved. We've got a CDP swag bag for you.
And if you'd like a CDP swag bag, leave us a review on iTunes or comment on the website or any of our social media. We post all our shows to LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and Google+. So we originally recorded this as one full episode with both sets of seven in it. But during the editing process, it became clear that we had too much material for just one episode. So the decision was made to split it into two episodes.
Because that's never happened to us before, ever.
No, we do not.
We never talk too much.
Yeah. Basically, we wanted to get these out near the time I started my new position. So we've pushed back a few previously recorded episodes. So in the next few weeks, you may hear me talking about the interview process and going through it. Just remember that those were recorded before these. But before we get into the seven things to avoid your first week, I wanted to give a quick review of my experience this past week starting my new job. Now, because it was the 4th of July holiday, the week was short, but I managed to get all seven things to do in my first week. We do have a daily stand-up or daily scrum each morning that is actually run appropriately. We do stand the entire time, and it is time-limited to just 15 minutes.
Wow, I don't think I've ever been anywhere that's actually done that.
Yeah, I actually complimented our scrum master on being really on the ball about that. And I went to lunch with people from the team each day last week. So I've broken it down into each day. So day one, setup and rubber ducking. My first day was mostly getting my dev environment set up and running. We use Visual Studio, and I had to get all the permissions and access to the database, TFS, the Git repo, all that stuff. On the front end, we use VS Code, and needless to say, I love that.
Yeah, that's definitely a much better tool. It's just lightweight, you know, being able to switch like that. That's a really good choice for a team like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, the only real issue I ran into was we had trouble getting me access to the source code. So on day one, I didn't even get to see the source code.
Good old TFS permissions.
Yes. I did stay a little bit after the morning stand-up to get caught up to kind of where they were in the current sprint and what's expected of me so far in the sprint. And that was great because the stand-up ended and the scrum master said, all right, anyone that wants to stay and, you know, sit down and we can kind of work BJ up to that is welcome to stay. Otherwise, the stand-up is over. And like I said, she does a great job of really maintaining that 15-minute time limit.
That impresses me a lot right there, especially like that's not usually the stereotype of a government job at all.
I was able to help solve a couple of Angular problems. Not so much because of my extensive knowledge of Angular, but more by being a sounding board for our front-end developer on the team. Pretty much functioned as a squeaky rubber duck, more encouraging him to try a few different ideas that we talked about, sort of saying, well, give it a try. If it doesn't work, you know. And we end up solving one of the big issues on the sprint in the afternoon on my first day. So
nice.
Day two was getting into the code. We finally figured out the problem that was preventing me from getting into the source code. And just like Will said, it was something about the licensing. And once we got the right people on it, it got solved pretty quickly. I spent most of the day reading through the code, familiarizing myself with what had been done, what needed to be done, and comparing that to the tasks for the current sprint. The other .NET developer came over and walked me through a few bits of code, explaining the way it was structured and what she'd been doing and what was expected of me.
And kind of how your coding standards and all that.
Yeah,
it was super helpful. That's really important.
Yeah. That just, what she had already done and then coming over and doing that the day I got into the code really made it so that I could jump right in on day three, which I titled My First Commit. Like I said, a lot of the heavy lifting had already been done for this sprint, so all I needed to do was just add some implementation details to get the API up and running. I made my first commit around 8 a.m., and even sent you a Hangout message.
Yes, you did.
I was so excited. I was like, my first commit.
I think that one actually popped up during my morning stand-up.
Yeah.
So I was like telling, you know, he who shall not be named. I was like, oh, Beach just made a commit. He goes, it's kind of early for that, isn't it? Like, you mean in the morning or in his job? Because both of those are kind of true.
I did also get to meet one of the product owners for the project I'm working on.
That's also helpful.
Mm-hmm. So day 4, daily routine. Now, by this time, I'm starting to kind of get a feel for how my days are going to be going. And even wrote up a tentative daily schedule for myself. I'm not a morning person, but to get a decent parking spot and not have to pay for it, I have to get there early. And so I kind of like it because I get in, there's not a lot going on. I can get stuff done before the morning stand up.
Yeah.
And then go to the morning stand up, got an hour or two after that for working lunch and then the afternoon. It's a really great setup.
Yeah, that's same kind of situation with me. Well, obviously, the parking's not a concern where I am. But, you know, I get there 6:30 in the morning. I probably need to start getting there a little bit earlier, but I've only got a few more weeks of that left.
Mm-hmm.
But it's great. It's just quiet. You're there, like, you warm up as the office warms up.
Yeah.
And
finally, I did something that I didn't think much about at the time, but after telling my mom about it, of all people, she suggested I share it on the podcast.
Huh.
I received some praise for the work I'd done on the API from the front end guys. Now, y'all know I like praise, but I don't want to be praised for stuff I didn't do.
Right.
So I made sure that the other .NET coder who'd done most of the heavy lifting for it got her due as well. You know, basically said, hey, yeah, she loaded the truck. I just drove it over.
Yeah. Well, the other thing, too, is you don't want it to be your fault if something's wrong.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't really think much of it until as I was leaving, she came up to me and thanked me for saying that. But that made an impression on her. So before we get into the 7 things not to do your first week on the job, I kind of want to go over some reasons to not take praise for work you didn't do. Or that you didn't do alone. Now, the first one is expectations. I didn't want them to expect that I could do 2 weeks worth of work in 2 days.
Yeah. Because when you don't.
Yeah. You want to set realistic expectations for your future work. Next is trust and teamwork. I mean, basically taking credit for someone else's work is lying. And yeah, you may get a momentary feeling of glory in getting the praise, but in the long run, that's going to hurt. And that's going to hurt because of politics.
Yeah.
And basically, guys, take the credit, do you, but also give credit where it's due.
Yeah. And I mean, you also do want to make sure you do get the credit for the things you do, like mm-hmm. as a corollary. Mm-hmm. It's very handy. You know, with the good things that we talked about, there's also 7 things not to do during your first week. And these match the first 7 points. Mm-hmm. Like this is the pathological version of those 7 things. This is what you are doing if you're screwing up those first 7.
And so if you're doing the first 7 and doing them wrong.
Or you're not doing them. You're going the opposite direction. And the first is do not engage in gossip. You shouldn't be doing it anyway, but most people do. But don't do it the first week.
I'll tell you, it's really, really easy, especially when you're meeting new people, to get in on the gossip because you're kind of removed and you don't have any attachments. And so you're an easy person to gossip to. Also, it's something that I've noticed when introducing people is one thing they have in common is talking trash about me to my face. It's not like they talk behind my back. Well, they probably do that too, but you've done this when I've introduced you to new people.
You know how Beach does.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, that's something that used to bother me until I realized
that's kind of a human communication protocol.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily really bad stuff though.
No, it's not.
It's usually telling stories about stuff that's happened.
Yeah.
You know, this one time, you know, kind of ragging on you a little bit. Uh-huh. But that's not really what I'm talking about. I'm talking more about a lot of companies have got pathological social engineering types that try to get one over on other people. When you go into a new position, that person will be the person that comes to you with gossip first.
Yeah, because
trying to get people on their side.
Yeah, I was going to say, they're wanting to determine where you stand on that. And no, I wasn't mentioning that because that experience was bad or anything. I was using it as an example to say, this is something that you really have to watch out for because it's so natural just to do this, especially going into a new environment or meeting new people.
Well, and that's the thing you have in common.
Yes.
Right? You just met Bob from accounting. Someday I'm going to meet somebody named Bob who works in accounting. He's going to be like, why are you talking about me, bro? But anyway, you know, you just met Bob from accounting. They know you know Bob from accounting. They know nothing else about you. So what do they talk about? Bob. It's nothing personal against him, but, you know,
common reference to build a conversation from.
Yeah, and it's sort of like where I grew up in. Kind of probably somewhat that way where you grew up, where they hear your last name and they go, oh, are you related to so-and-so that has this same last name that's like four counties over? Because they're trying to establish some kind of common rapport. And you have to consider that if somebody's willing to throw long-term coworkers under the bus with gossip, and if they're willing to do that with somebody they just met, it's unlikely they're going to be very good for you either. Because again, you don't have any natural rapport with this person. You know, starting out. So if they're already doing that, that's a real bad sign. Now, it could be the other person's really legitimately a jerk, but
or could be that they made the mistake of dating coworkers, and that's something you need to stay out of, anyways.
Yeah, and so there's just a lot of little things like that. So don't get involved in the gossip, and you always have to think about why. So like if you started and somebody comes to you with gossip, why? Like what's their gain? And the big thing I try to always remember is there was an old proverb, and I can't remember. I want to say it's Russian. It probably is. It says that when the rabbit cries out, the wolf comes running, but not to help.
It's so true.
And you need to bear in mind what people are.
Sounds so Russian.
Yeah, it really does. But it seems like it would be bigger animals if it was Russian. You know?
But depends on where in Russia.
Huh?
Depends on where in Russia.
Yeah. So Beach just looked up the quote I had, and that's actually from Silence of the Lambs. I'm sorry.
The quote's a little bit different. It states, when the fox hears the rabbit scream, he comes a-running, but not to help.
Yeah.
That's from The Silence of the Lambs by Thomas Harris.
Well, you know, it's legit. that's something to think about. The next thing is do not leave early or arrive late, if at all possible. Like, that includes even like things like doctor's appointments. Try to avoid having those scheduled for the first week of a job. It's better to reschedule that and not be in a situation where you're starting a new job and you're having to leave. Once you're kind of established, you can kind of play with your hours a little bit. Even if it's a flexible schedule, you don't want to treat it like it's flexible the first little while, because you get judged by how much time you put in, because you're not producing output.
I would also point out that if you arrive early, at least during the first week, don't pull the arrive early, leave early.
Right.
Be there the hours that you're scheduled to be there. And get a feel for the company culture. You know, I know some places, they have a very business hours mentality. And even if you arrive early, they still expect you to be there.
Yes.
During business hours. Whereas others understand that their developer schedule doesn't need to match the business schedule. And so you can arrive an hour too early so that you can leave an hour or two early, so long as you're there for the time that you're supposed to be there.
Yeah. Well, the other thing too is if you're arriving late or you're leaving early, people see you leave. And guess what happens when you do that? They're sitting there gossiping, potentially. Mm-hmm. Like you're giving up a very serious opportunity for somebody to, you know, that may be politically misaligned with you to cause you problems, and they're in a position of power.
Also, you want to watch the length of your lunch breaks. unless you're eating with a management, of course. But yeah.
But you don't want to be going out and taking 2-hour lunch breaks, because people notice, like, people are more aware of what you're doing when you're new.
That's so true.
Because, you know, we're human beings are, like, if you looked at us programmatically, we're pattern matching devices. And what do? We get used to a pattern and we ignore it. But when something disrupts the pattern, we pay attention to it.
And this can be good and bad too, because, like, still relatively new. I am the most recent hire. And when I called out for my dad falling and breaking his hip, I came in the next day and, you know, filled out the leave of absence forms and stuff. But people that weren't there when I called out came up to me and asked how he was doing, and, you know, said that they were thinking about him and stuff like that, and wished him a healthy recovery. And so, you know,
You set the tone, right?
Yeah, you really
do. The expectations, like, I did this in college at Lipscomb, and I know you probably did too. We had a midnight curfew. And what I would do at the beginning of every semester is I would be lights out, you know, well before then. And so when they would come in, because, you know, they actually came by and checked our rooms in the dorm I was in. I don't know if they did it in yours, but they would actually check to make sure you were in.
Yes.
And I would chew them out. And I did that, you know, for the first few weeks, because I knew that if I did do that, they would expect it and they would quit coming in there. And then I could be out half the night. And I know that that's not exactly the way you want to do things, but, you know, you really want to think about it in a job situation. That is kind of what you want to be able to do. Like, you want to be able to have more flexibility with your time, but you can't have it at the beginning if you want it at the end. The next thing is don't offer loud opinions about coding minutia.
I love this one because I got Will on a spelling error.
Yeah. Speaking of minutia, because, you know, we edit our podcast outlines in Visual Studio Code, and there's spell checking is sometimes
problematic
there.
At best.
Yeah. Sometimes it's there and sometimes not so much. But, you know, I have a really hard time with this because I really hate object relational mappers. It's very easy to come across as not getting along with the team when you have a strong opinion early on that they don't share. Or even if they do share it, like, you can, it's very easy to get too vehement about it when you don't know all the pieces going on. And honestly, at the end of the day, a lot of these things don't really make that much of a difference. Like, I've had round discussions, for instance, in C Sharp with people that don't like the link syntax. They want to use, you know, the lambda syntax.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it does a query. It's the same thing. Like, you use whatever, which one works, you know, and what's the difference in what their output is? Well, they're both terrible. But no, querying databases, but, you know, back to the minutia again, they produce the same thing. So, like, you don't want to be, you know, kicking and screaming about this kind of stuff early on. And you got to bear in mind, it's also really easy to be kind of full of crap.
Yeah. And you never know when you're going to be interacting with your next mentor.
Yes. Because, you know, people will teach you things and your opinion will evolve over time. Like, I used to not hate ORMs. I used to think they were the greatest thing in the world and that I can't believe why other people aren't using it and these old fuddy-duddies. And I've become one.
It kind of comes down to really keep your strong opinions to yourself.
Yeah.
Really just keep your opinions to yourself, at least in the beginning.
Yeah. Until you're established, because, you know, you really don't have a basis for it. It's at this point, you know, when it's early on, your opinion is not even really an opinion. You know, it's not an informed opinion. It's a prejudice. And you've got to bear that in mind. Like, you got to get it to the point where you know enough to actually have a valid opinion and be taken that way.
It's not like this podcast where we can very vehemently discuss our strong opinions.
Oh, yeah. You don't want to talk like we do.
Not at all.
You know, in a first week job environment, that's a no-go. Even if you do think something very strongly, you know, be kind of careful about that.
I would think that you didn't even do this with He Who Should Not Be Named.
Not as much, no. I mean, to some degree, there was a lot of stuff I got early on that, like, I was told pretty early about what people felt about the code.
Okay.
At a very sincere and earnest level. Let's just put it that way. So, like, I guess the thing is I had strong opinions, but they weren't as strong as others' opinions that were. Yeah. So I wasn't the problem on that one. One thing you do want to do too, if you do start coding, if you're able to code the first week, is once you've built something, get somebody to review it before you check it in and go, hey, let me make sure I'm following the practices of the team. Because now you're collaborating, you're not dictating.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to try to be a dictator when you just showed up. Like that immediately causes problems. The next thing is don't critique the code unless you've heard most of the team do so, including management, which is kind of where I found myself with he who shall not be named. Management was fairly clear on some messes that had been created.
Mm-hmm.
Previous, and he who shall not be named was very clear in meetings with management about previous developers. Gotcha. And then, they were directly asking me what my opinion was.
Well, that's a completely different thing.
Yeah.
Being directly asked your opinion about something versus volunteering.
Yeah, it's their fault.
Yes.
It's sort of like if I do something bad to you, the law of karma says that you deserved it.
Funny. I've warned several bosses in the past, and that if you ask my opinion,
you'll get it.
You will get my opinion. I won't volunteer unproductive opinions or opinions that, maybe not the best to share. But if you ask it, I'm not going to lie to you.
Right.
And all the places I've worked at appreciated that and knew what they were going to get when they asked my opinion.
And knew how loud and direct it would be.
Yes.
Another thing is sometimes the code or sometimes the person that wrote that code is still there. And sometimes they're your boss.
Yes.
And you might not be completely aware of who did what, because mm-hmm. a lot of development managers are former developers. And I'll add a corollary to this that I feel a little uncomfortable saying, but a lot of development managers get promoted into development management because their code is maybe not so great and their people skills are good.
Yeah.
And so you don't want to be criticizing code just willy-nilly and not knowing who wrote it.
Well, see, I've heard the other end of that a lot of really good developers
get punished
by being promoted to management.
Yeah, it's one or the other.
Yeah.
You have to be on the ends of the spectrum. If you're in the middle, you'll always be just hanging out.
Yeah. Sometimes the code was written that way for a reason, and the business model or the direction of the business is going may have changed since that code was written.
Yeah. Well, like the project I'm on at work, it's got a separate, there's a lot of pieces that are separate. Like it's a separate app from our main app, but it's going to live inside our main app, and we're shifting that now. And it would have been very easy early on to critique that. But initially it was supposed to be a separate, completely separate app, but they mm-hmm. reused pieces because they were trying to reuse code and they had some, but things shifted and they realized, no, wait, this is goofy. Why are we breaking this out? Because the customers want this to be part of the main thing. Mm-hmm. And because of that change, now you've got things that don't make sense in the code.
No.
So you don't want to critique that because you don't know what the conditions were that was written under.
Exactly.
It's like critiquing people.
Yeah. And a lot of times, if you critique things early on in your time there, you're going to come across as arrogant.
Yeah. But what you do is you ask questions.
Yeah. Yes and no. You ask questions to better understand. You don't want to be, and you and I both know the guys that ask questions to show how much they know, because we've both done that before.
Oh yeah. And it mostly doesn't work.
No, it doesn't.
But you want to ask questions to get explanation of what was going on, because the other thing is that code may be messed up because there were other things going on. Like the project I'm on at work right now, there's a lot of code in there that it's very difficult to look at it and go, this person knew what they were doing. And the issue is what it comes down to is the guy that was working on it was having a meltdown. He was going through a bad divorce. It reflects in his code. It's not reflective of what his actual capabilities were. It was just a really bad time in his life when this code was getting written. And understanding that makes it easier to get a grasp of what's going on. Because the thing is like, if you assume he was a bad coder, there's stuff in there that will surprise you because he was actually a fairly good coder in a bad situation.
That makes perfect sense. Also, you got to remember that your opinion really doesn't fix anything.
Yeah. It's funny how that works. Like, I mean, I know one of the major characteristics of a good programmer is hubris, but the fact that you don't like the way something is built doesn't necessarily mean you can fix it. The next thing to not do is don't try to engage in political power plays at all during the first week. I'm not telling you not to ever do this because eventually every job becomes politics. That is unavoidable because that's sort of like the bugs in software, but it's bugs in human interaction. And I mentioned that earlier. So you can't avoid it eventually, but you don't want to do it early on. If you think an organization needs major change and you weren't brought in to enact that major change, why are you there? You know, that part of that speaks to your motivation to be in that situation. And if you're feeling the urge to start playing politics early on, you need to figure out where that's coming from, because it probably indicates something going wrong in the job environment, or indicates a bad attitude on your part, or indicates that you need to be somewhere else. It's not a good situation. The other thing is you don't, you know, a week in, you don't know the lay of the land. So you don't know enough to actually play politics.
No, you really don't.
And you can get really, really burned. Like, I've seen a situation where somebody basically threw their boss under the bus over something in a meeting, you know, with the CIO, because they wanted to look important to the CIO, and the CIO turned in his resignation the next day. The rest of the office knew.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, you got to make sure when you swing the axe that you actually know what you're hitting, because it might be you. And
wow. I'm sorry. That's just.
Yeah. And
oh,
we all saw that and nobody said a word because the guy was arrogant anyway. And we all knew, and we're just like, well, he's shark bait already.
No,
that's you can't help him. You're just going to be in there with him.
Mm-hmm.
So bye, bye, Felicia. Now we talked before about the gossips that come up to you, and they'll bring up structural problems. They'll bring up, previous screw ups. Don't ask about those for a little bit till you fill out the lay of the land, because sometimes people will tell you things to get you to ask questions because it serves their agenda, not yours. When you don't know what that agenda actually is, that's, you don't want to be serving it.
It's best to keep your thoughts and opinions to yourself.
You don't want to come off as a know-it-all. Like, if you were a detective, you want to be Columbo, not Sherlock. It's a thing of, okay, let them underestimate you a little bit. Don't let them think, okay, you don't want to start out with people having their guard up.
Yeah, exactly.
And playing political stuff early on is a really good way to have that happen. The next thing is, don't try to take on a big problem. And the starting thing is like, let's say that you're working at a company that builds websites and they've got custom CSS. Don't switch it to Bootstrap your first week. Don't commit to doing something like that.
That's huge.
Yeah. You do not want to take on a big problem, because what happens? Well, then, you're a month or two in and you've delivered nothing.
Yeah. You want to do small, manageable problems to build up a reputation, so that when you want to take on a big problem, people say, here's a guy that gets things done.
Give it to him and leave him alone.
Yeah.
So that you can actually succeed. Mm-hmm. And, let's talk about that whole reputation thing, because people are under the impression that you get a reputation for solving big, difficult problems, and you don't. It's the number of problems you solve, that actually establishes that in people's heads. Now, it doesn't mean you don't take on big problems, because they're more fun, but you get the reputation before you do it.
Yeah, well, people remember quantity over quality. It's just the way our brains work.
The other thing is, you can break things down into the deliverables that are smaller. Like, you can take on a big project, but do not take it on as a unit.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that goes back to our refactoring episode.
Yeah. It's just, fight something that you can actually win.
And also, when you get, as you start to develop a reputation for getting things done, you'll be asked to solve harder problems.
And you'll be put in a position to do so, because they'll leave you alone. They won't be micromanaging you.
Yeah. And I know, outside of development, in the job I've been doing lately, I get asked to do a lot of organizational things scheduling type things and room assignments for therapists, things like that, because my boss realized that's the way my brain thinks.
Yeah.
And I can look at a board and look at the list of what therapists like what rooms and just see in my mind where to assign them. And other people don't think like that.
Yeah, and they do other things well.
Yeah, they have other things like...
Yeah, that's really helpful. Another thing is on big problems, something people don't think about is they can lead you into political interactions where you have no leverage. So one thing that I kind of made a mistake on at the job I'm at right now is I did not have a real deliverable early on the project I'm on. And that caused some problems. Now, I've worked my way out of it. Where it's not, you know, where it's not a very big deal, but the fact that I took on a larger task put me into a political situation where I had no leverage. Does that make sense? Like,
that makes perfect sense. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, when you take on a big project and maybe it doesn't go well, or maybe there's complexity there that you didn't see, it's way easier to go, oh, I wasted an hour than I wasted 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. That kind of leverage is not, that's not the place you want to start at.
No.
In fact, you never want to be there.
Yeah, I was say you don't want to be wasting any time, but if
you're going to waste some.
Yeah.
But yeah, you don't want to be in a situation where it's an obvious waste by a person that does not have any political pull.
Mm-hmm.
That's just not, it's not very safe. And the last one is don't be messy. And this is something I've picked up on. I try to clean my desk before I leave for the day, or at least straighten it up. And we all know that cleaning is really putting things in less obvious places.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know, and knocking the dust off of things. Like, that's all you're doing. But showing early signs of disorganization does not inspire confidence. Like, if people come in and it's your second day and your desk is already a dump, you know, and there's like spilled Coke and there's like Doritos crumbs all over your keyboard and stuff, that, you know, you're not Dennis Nedry in Jurassic Park, okay? Like, this doesn't fly anymore. You just can't. You can't be doing that.
I'll tell you, I was listening to a podcast about they're interviewing. I think it might have been the Code Newbie podcast. I'll have to double check. But they're interviewing a guy that had written it's not a play. It's more of an experience of being a temp.
Yeah.
And you come into someone's desk who is well established. Like, you know, there's shoes under the desk, and then, you know,
yeah,
all this stuff. And it's like you come in, it's an interactive play, so to speak, or interactive movie, because it's really fascinating. And they wrote the code for it in Ruby. So it was, yeah, I think it was Code Newbie, because that was, it was an interesting thing called temping.
Seems like there should be a special method missing for a missing red swing line stapler. But you know, the thing is another thing with the messy desk thing is you want, when you start a new job, like actually settle in and kind of personalize your space and do that early. Because that, I've known managers that walk around after hours and they look. And what that says is, hey, this person's comfortable and they're here.
Yeah.
Not, okay, well, they're still keeping all their crap packed in a box in case they have to leave tomorrow. You know, that's just kind of like laying it on the table and going, okay, I'm good here.
It also depends on the environment. For example, some places that I have interviewed, you know, some of them had office space that's similar to where you work, where you share an office room with he who shall not be named, and you each have a desk, and others were cubicle farms. And then some of them were very...
where you come in and you don't have an official desk.
Yes.
Why don't you just haul all your crap behind you like luggage going through an airport so that you can sit down at your desk every day.
And unload it.
And unload it every day and waste all that time, because that's what people in Silicon Valley, which by the way has crazy real estate prices, that's why they do this. And everybody works remote because nobody can afford to live there.
Yeah.
And they only come in occasionally. Like, they do that because of other constraints. Like, you shouldn't be doing that in Nashville. There's almost nowhere that you should be, that you're working,
well,
where that should happen.
Rental prices are really
high, goodness. But it's just there's a lot of follower type things. Now, there's some places that they send you out to jobs and most of their people are remote, like working on tasks, and they don't have assigned seating because of that. And that's fine.
Yeah, that's a different story.
Yeah. Even then, it's really annoying if you're coming in every day. Like, mm-hmm. But you want to personalize your space because of this. Like, you know, and that's part of being a real person too, because once you're working there and they go, oh, there's a picture of them with their family. Like, you're now a real person. You're not employee number 748.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, personally, me, I mean, I'm sure I'm going to have pictures of me with my nieces and nephew up and stuff like that, and probably my motorcycle, because y'all know how I feel about my motorcycle. Yeah, it's a member of the family.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, you can't fix this, but, you know, if there's an external constraint. Like, there was one startup I worked for where I didn't have a desk for 2 weeks. I sat on the floor with my laptop and a spare monitor cable snaked around for 2 weeks because people didn't have it quite together. And, you know, so sometimes you just can't fix it.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and I don't really want to talk about that. That was the same experience with, you know, yeah, that was just a long time ago. You know, so sometimes you can't handle it. But I guess it's not so much about being messy and how that interferes with your work, even though it can when you can't find things that you need. But when somebody's walking through the office, like let's say it's your boss and their boss, and they're walking through the cube farm and they come past your desk and it's a dump, what do they talk about then? Like it's very easy, especially if, you know, let's say your boss's boss, you know, maybe you had some kind of slight political snafu earlier in the day, this compounds it. And so you don't want to be doing that. You don't want to be sloppy. You want to be neat and have stuff put up within reason.
Yeah. I mean, there's a difference between, like, the Jurassic Park example that you gave and
having a completely bare desk and not having.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, and I think Indiana Jones with, like, the desk with all the stacks of papers and stuff like that. It's like, it's cluttered, but it's not messy.
Yeah. It's a get stuff done workspace. Like, yes. Papers are more acceptable than food.
Well, honestly, I mean, even if you are eating at your desk and whatnot, throw your trash away.
Yeah.
And that's important.
I know a few people that just absolutely don't do that. And it's very quickly disgusting.
Yes. Yes, it is.
You know, and just, I mean, little things like leaving a cup out that, you know, you wash the cup every day and you drink out of the cup every day. But the fact that they've seen that same cup sitting on your desk, it's not, you know, like, it's very easy for them to project that this person just drinks out of the same cup every day because they're just nasty.
Well, yeah, there's that.
Like, think about it from a narrative perspective. If you were going, I'm walking into this cube and I'm going to tell a story about the person that lives here and I don't know them and I've never seen them.
This is why you get you get one of those red Solo cup looking things, so it looks like you got a new cup all the time.
Yeah.
No, I'm just messing. But no, I mean, it's
just a mason jar, just a ball jar.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah,
sitting there. Yeah. With a little bit of liquid in the bottom. You know, just get the right impression across.
Yeah. Clear liquid, a little bit of water down the bottom. Let them imagine.
Yeah.
That about wraps us up. Before we close everything out, Will, what do you have for us this week for Tricks of the Trade?
Well, it's actually something you kind of mentioned when you were talking about your first week. One thing you want to do is find out what the actual coding standards are where you work. So, like, how they name variables, how they name functions, how they organize their code, how often they comment. And the idea here is sort of like when you go to a campsite in a national park, you leave only footprints. In other words, nobody looks at it and goes, oh, that's Beege's code. Like, it's somebody did the code and you have to look at the commit log, because then you're meeting expectations and nobody gets surprised, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense.
Yeah. And most organizations don't have formal documentation on this. And if they do, it doesn't match the code anyway, because the sort of places that have the manpower to do that aren't putting that manpower towards actually writing the code. So, you know, like, you're going to have to figure this out as you go. It's sort of like manners in scenarios where you're not around the highly cultured people. Like, it's like trailer park manners. You figure that out by getting hit in the face. Yeah. But the big thing is you want to be able to write code that matches what is already there, because that immediately makes you look like a member of the team. Like, you fit in, you're not standing out. You know, there's places to stand out, but that isn't one of them. Another thing that this helps with is it actually allows you to still provide value even if the code base is really bad, because you may write bad code that matches what else is there. Like it may be that part of the cycle, that's what you got to do right now. And that gets you to where you're actually providing value, which, funnily enough, is what people are paying you for. And you can actually write down those code standards for your own use. This is one of these future planning things. Write the standards down as you discover them. And then when a new employee comes in, go, hey, here's my notes on the code standards.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
Yeah. And it makes you look forward thinking. It helps them. And people saw you help them. Plus, it makes it easier on the rest of the team. Like, it's a win all the way around. So, that's what I would throw out there is try to match the coding standards. You can always help change them, but don't change them just willy-nilly. So, that's what I got.
Stand by for Titanfall.
If you have a question or comment for us, please email us at neckbeards@completedeveloperpodcast.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from Stand By for Titanfall by Pure Bells, available on SoundCloud and licensed under Creative Commons. The intro music for IoTs is Hillbilly Hip Hop by Jason Belcher. For references, show notes, and to sign up to our email list, be sure and check out the website at CompleteDeveloperPodcast.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at CompleteDevPod and like our page on Facebook to keep up with the news about the show. Thanks for listening. See you next time.